Binance could face fraud charges from the Department of Justice. But what is the Department of Justice waiting for?
Bankless Nation, happy first Friday of August. David, what time is it?
Oh, Ryan, it's the Bankless Friday weekly roll-up where we cover the entire weekly news in crypto, which is always an ambitious endeavor. Yet, we persevere into this bullish frontier. I'm claiming it's bullish this week. It's a very bullish week to me. I think it's a bullish.
David came down from the mountains bullish. Okay, yes. So what was the elevation of Matterhorn and how did that go?
The elevation of Matterhorn was 14,690 feet.
Okay, mark that number, Bankless listeners.
You can't necessarily judge a mountain by its elevation. Matterhorn's very steep. Yeah. It was a great mountain.
But that elevation is high, though, right? That elevation is high as far as mountains go.
I mean, high is relative. I wouldn't call it super high. Like, Everest is 26,000 feet or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. That was definitely, like, feeling the altitude, that's for sure.
Do you see my comment? That's going to be the elevation of Matterhorn is going to be the top price of Ether during the next bull cycle. So give us that number again. 14,000 what?
14,690.
There it is. Yeah. It has been prophesied. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to like as Ether pumps through this next bull market. It's like, oh, it passed my summit at Baker. Oh, it passed my summit at Pollux. Oh, it passed my summit at Rainier.
You need to tweet that every single time it does, man. That's great. Well, it's great to have you back, Dankless.
It's really good to be back. I'm just calling
you Dankless. Dankless. David and Bankless is Dankless.
It's not the first time the word Dankless has been uttered. I'm very excited to be back. It's a very good time to be back. It's a very good week to be in crypto. I was a very entertaining week. Good things happened, some bad things happened, more good things than bad things, I would say. And like I said, I'm feeling pretty bullish. I don't know about you.
All right. No, I'm feeling bullish too. Although there were some bad things that happened this week, starting with the Curve exploit, which we got to talk about. That led to a cascade of events across all of DeFi. Everyone's talking about the CRV token right now. We did an entire episode on that. I think we got to get the recap in today's roll up. David, what else are we covering?
What else? We got the base launch date is announced. We're about to drop the base and a meme coin frenzy has already happened on base. So it's already had its meme coin frenzy cycle, or at least the first of perhaps future cycles. Richard Hart is sued by the SEC for fraud and issuing unregistered securities. Man, like I never thought I'd see the day, but here we are. So we're going to talk about all of that and why some people are thinking that the Department of Justice is not far behind. And then also Binance is in the hot seat. Speaking of the Department of Justice, investigation for fraud. Are they too big to fail? Does that matter for Binance? What else we got, Ryan? We got some birthdays, don't we?
We got a birthday to celebrate in the episode. I'm not going to tell you what birthday we're about to celebrate, but it's a big one. It's an important one. So stay tuned in the show, guys, for that. David, while we're here, we got to shout out our friends and sponsors over at Stater, a new staking protocol that is also decentralized, which is very exciting. David, what's going on with Stater? What do they want the Bankless Nation to know?
Brand new staking as a service protocol on the scene with as low as 4 Ether for your bond. So if you want to run a node with Stater, not just stake with Stater, but run your node with Stater because it's a permissionless protocol, you can do this. You only have to stake 4 ETH. It's one of the lowest capital requirements that I've seen. They also are issuing SD token, the native token of the protocol, to people who stake. So if this piques you, there is a link in the show notes to get started staking with Stater. Staking with Stater kind of rolls off the tongue.
All right, let's go see what's cracking. Oh, thanks, Kraken, for these fantastic charts. What's Bitcoin price on the week?
When did you think of that one?
Not going to lie, it was a while ago. You know, I've been waiting for that. Been waiting for you to come down the mountains.
Oh my God, I'm glad you did. Bitcoin started the week at 29,400, down 0.3% to 29,330. Bitcoin lost a whopping $70. So that is flatter than flat, I would say.
That's pancake flat that right is, there yeah, on the week. Uh-huh. How about ETH price?
ETH price, a little bit actually down.
A little counts, bump?
Yeah, you know, down. 18,075 down 1.5% to 1,840. I didn't say 18,000. We're not there yet. That's later. 1,875 down to 1,840.
Yeah, 18,000 would be past your Matterhorn peak there. You got to climb a higher mountain for that to happen.
Yeah,
okay?
That's exactly right. That's a great excuse to go climb another mountain.
don't. Man, I was, I'm not going to lie, a little bit worried for you on this one. You know, you're posting about like snow conditions and you know whether you should do it or not, and so I think we're good for now. How about the ratio, ETH Bitcoin ratio?
Yeah, down about 1.5%, so 0.062. it's stayed in the low 0.06s for a while now.
Can I zoom out here for a second? It's been kind of flat summer, hasn't it?
Yeah, like, well, it's been flat since the start of the last bull market. It's been flat for a very long time. It's been like 2 years now.
I'm looking back in June.
And then this is what Ether does. It is a stable coin, and then it goes vertical.
All right. Well, that's great. We found our stable coin finally, the decentralized stable coin we've been waiting for. How about the crypto market cap, David?
Over 1.2 trillion.
All right. Hey.
Man, we've been up the total crypto market cap. I mean, it goes up, it goes down, but it's been on an upward trend for 7 months in a row now.
Yeah.
Ever since FTX.
Yeah. I mean, not too bad to be above a trillion, as we always say. David, let's talk about all of that ETH. What it's doing. What is it doing? It's getting staked.
Yeah.
This is crazy to me. Look at these numbers. Can you read them out?
I mean, this isn't new news. It's just the news is that there's more of it happening. 25 million Ether staked is the threshold that we have recently passed. 22.5 million is actively staking, with 2.5 million, over 10%, is actively queued up.
Waiting to get in. Wow. Yeah. And I think there's like a 30 to 40 day wait time now.
Yeah.
Like if you're in the queue, you got to, in order to get in the staking club, you got to wait 40 days, which is pretty incredible. Man, a lot of interest there. But what happens when more ETH is staked? That means yield goes down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that okay? Are we happy with that? We don't care. Yeah. Up goes down.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's part of the game.
Part of the game.
I mean, can all please unstake, and I will gladly take your issuance.
He'll take the issuance. David will take all the MEV. Let's talk about another type of yield, and that is interest payments. Interest payments are the fastest growing U.S. federal expense. Did you know? What is this chart that we're looking on? They're about to pass $1 trillion. I'm of course, talking about how much the U.S. government has to pay in interest on its debt. Because, the U.S. government is in a lot of debt. Look at this chart right now. What are we looking at?
We are looking at the chart of government debt. It looks like a shitcoin parabola. That's how I would describe this. So in 1991, we were looking at maybe $4 trillion of government debt. It had already started to increase pretty fast at that point for the decades prior. Moving up to like 2005, we're at a doubling of $8 trillion in debt. Moving into 2012, we're at $16 trillion, so another doubling. 2019, $22 trillion of debt, to where we are now at $32 trillion in debt. And that makes, according to this tweet, about $1 trillion in interest payments that the government has to make this year. That's a lot of money.
This is more than the U.S. spends on defense.
Yes.
And the U.S. spends a lot on its military.
That sounds like spiraling debt.
Well, related to this, Fitch is a ratings agency. So they rate various debts of different kind. Fitch downgraded the U.S. debt rating, basically their credit worthiness, to AA+ from AAA. And that apparently
AAA is AA+. These ratings, I think, could do it with a redo, but whatever.
Crypto can't fix that yet, David. Their statement was why. So why did they downgrade the U.S.? A few reasons. Three, primarily. Fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years. Okay, that means they expect the legislators and Congress and the president to continue spending. Number two, a growing general debt burden. We just saw it.
Yeah.
$32 trillion. Number three, erosion of governance related to its peers. So the U.S. having an inability to actually govern itself?
Some of the comments that they gave are pretty funny. The U.S. government lacks a medium-term fiscal framework. I think that's related to the governance issue. Like they just, we can't govern our own spending. the budgeting process is extremely complicated, they cited. U.S. politicians don't really know what's going on with their own budget.
Quote,
too confusing to even be a proper government. I'm quoting Kyla Scanlon, quoting. So we're hearing this through the grapevine a little bit. But then also they cited the rising cost of Social Security and Medicare. We got an old population. And just like shout out to Kyla and her humor. Boomers are booming.
Very true. Luke Raman has a take here. The U.S. cannot mathematically sustain their debt and deficits without sustained negative real rates. That's a problem when you raise rates. Mm-hmm. So don't tell me the downgrade doesn't make sense. Tell me which suckers at the card table collectively have a big enough balance sheet to hold $32 trillion in debt at negative real rates. Yeah, that's the question. I don't know who's buying bonds, David. Mm-hmm. Do you? Who's buying bonds? You buying any bonds?
Not me.
I'm buying Ether bonds. The internet bonds.
Yeah, the bonds that are both giving you real yields and also capital appreciation. Yeah. I remember talking last week, we were talking about like the Fed, because the Fed raised interest rates last week, a quarter, 25 bips, if you will.
Ooh, bips. I like the cut of your jib, David. Yeah. You're learning these finance terms. Yeah,
but the comment I made is like, man, I haven't thought about macro or interest rates. We haven't talked about the Fed pivoting in forever now. It's like the markets have written off how big of a deal these interest rates are anymore, because they are also slowing down and getting smaller, but also inflation's coming down. But also, like, all of the points that people have originally made is like, sure, we can jack up interest rates to combat inflation, but the Fed has a date with destiny, and that destiny is to print money at some point in time. And so I think there's a decent possibility that the markets have written off the pivot. We've forgotten about it, but at some point in time, the money printer must resume. And whether that's 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, I don't know. But like, I think the market has written that off.
David, you're starting to sound a little bit like Ray Dalio to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you're bullish crypto. you're bearish government debt. Do you remember, I think it was a couple of roll-ups ago where I asked this question about, you know, all this Fed tightening. I mean, interest rates raised from basically close to 0% all the way to, you know, above 5%, right? And I remember being told at that time, and a lot of the prognosticators were saying, that will absolutely devastate everything. Like, that will be a catastrophe. Widespread job loss, like stock market will go down, like all of these bad things would happen. And so, I mean, I was told the Fed tightening would nuke everything. And the question is, why didn't it? Guess what? I think Ray Dalio is a listener to the Bankless podcast because he heard that question, maybe, and wrote his entire post about that this week. And
thanks, Ray.
He answered the question, and I think he did a good job answering it. Here's the take from Ray Dalio on why. There was a big government engineering shift in wealth from, one, the public sector, the central government and central bank, and number two, the holders of government bonds, to the private sector, which are households and businesses. This made the private sector relatively insensitive to the Fed's very rapid tightening to a more normal monetary policy. And as a result of this coordinated government maneuver, the household sector's balance sheets and income statements are in good shape, while the governments are in bad shape. So that's why unemployment is low. Feels like the private sector is doing okay. The stock market is almost all-time high. Because you know who took all the bullets for us? The U.S. balance sheet, that $32 trillion that we were looking at over there, and bondholders. That was the take. He simplifies it a little bit. More simply, central banks took on a lot more debt, so their balance sheets deteriorated, and the central banks printed a lot more money, which caused inflation to rise, and bought a lot of the debt to get money into the hands of the private sector, which now, as a result, is in relatively good shape financially. So yeah, bondholders took a haircut. The government's balance sheet took all the bullets. The private sector's doing okay. Wealth inequality increased even more. And that begs the question of what's the next phase of all of this. And I think the answer, according to Ray Dalio, is more money printing, as you're saying, but a different type of money printing. We already did the QE thing. We already did, you know, the buying bonds thing. The next step, according to Ray Dalio's, you know, long-term cycles and his planning is basically like helicopter money directly to the people to decrease wealth inequality, all sorts of government programs, fiscal and central bank programs kind of become the same, and we're just printing money and giving it to the people. That's kind of the next step.
Why do the people get the money? What's the motivation there?
Well, because look at things like the stock market's at an all-time high, right? But also wealth inequality has increased in the U.S.
But don't the people need to, like, you know, grab their pitchforks in order to induce the motivation in order to get the helicopter money?
Ah, yes, David.
Right.
Yes.
We're not going to be like, hey, we've decided to give a distribution to the people. Like, no.
I mean, look out there. Are you seeing pitchforks? Because I see pitchforks. They might be a little bit in the distance.
I'm not seeing pitchforks.
There's so much anger, like, politically. I mean, look at our political climate. I think so much of...
Yeah, I see there's a number of step, a gap in that happening, and then also helicopter money. I don't see those things like having a smooth directional...
I don't think it'll be smooth, but I think that there is increasing anger. You know, I blame social media for some of these things, blame the internet for some of these things. I think a lot of the anger just in general, like the question of why is everyone angry all of the time, is due to wealth inequality, due to like shrinking pie, due to lack of economic opportunities. There's again, the top 10%, the top 1% are doing fairly well in this type of environment, but a lot of people are left behind. Mm-hmm. The whole rural versus urban thing, that's another lens on this. I mean, not to get into politics, but 2024 in the U.S. political scene is going to be real rocky for many reasons, for lots of reasons. But one of them, I think, is part of the wealth inequality story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the big things that people were looking for is a depreciation of housing prices. And that has not happened. Like if you bought at the real estate at the top of the market in 2021, you're doing just fine. Like you're doing great.
Student debt is another example that, whole large conversation. I mean, there's many areas where this is spilling over into political, but let's move on. Let's talk about Tether for a second. Did you know, David, that Tether now holds more UST bills than Australia? It's pretty crazy.
Alrighty then. Okay. I mean, I don't know how many T-bills Australia holds.
Less than Tether.
Yeah.
So Tether, David, has $72 billion worth of T-bills. And apparently this is larger than the nation state of Australia. So there's a comment from Collins Belton about this. Wow, if true, Tether is apparently holding more T-bills than Australia and also the UAE and many other countries. At this point, regardless of whether you believe on their history, I think it's hard to see the U.S. government railroading these guys easily anymore.
What does that mean?
What do you think about that?
Who's the USG and what's railroading?
USG's government. He's saying the U.S. government. USG. Government.
What's railroading?
I think what he's saying is basically like the U.S. government is not going to shut Tether down, is not going to completely like excommunicate them. Oh,
is it too big to fail?
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying. Basically, when something like this gets too big, the government doesn't kill it because that would be too painful for everyone involved. Instead of killing it, they just legitimize it in some way. And so Collins is making the point that this seems to be what could be happening with Tether. I mean, they got more T-bills than most countries.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. That's probably bullish for crypto assets because it reduces the systemic risk of Tether. But then crypto just made another bank that's too big to fail. I'm not sure how to feel about this.
I don't know. I don't know how to feel
I'm going to take the bullish side. I'm bullish because of it.
All right. It's bull week. So when in doubt, you choose bullish. David, what do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, Curve Exploit and its founders mega loan sends DeFi into a hot seat. Base surpasses Arbitrum in daily transactions and it's not even live yet. And a protocol has celebrated its 8th birthday, starting to throw a little bit of breadcrumbs your way. We'll figure out who or what it is. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible. We're going to hear what's cracking from Kraken. Let's go hear from them right now. Kraken Pro has easily become the best crypto trading platform in the industry. The place I use to check the charts and the crypto prices, even when I'm not looking to place a trade. On Kraken Pro, you'll have access to advanced charting tools, real-time market data, and lightning-fast trade execution, all inside their spiffy new modular interface. Kraken's new customizable modular layout lets you tailor your trading experience to suit your needs. Pick and choose your favorite modules and place them anywhere you want in your screen. With Kraken Pro, you have that power. Whether you are a seasoned pro or just starting out, join thousands of traders who trust Kraken Pro for their crypto trading needs. Visit pro.kraken.com to get started today. Introducing Polygon 2.0, the value layer for the internet. For too long, the limitations of blockchains have held back app development and stifled user adoption. The internet allows anyone to create and exchange information. What's missing is a value layer that lets anyone exchange, store, and program value. That's where Polygon 2.0 comes in. Polygon Labs has unveiled a series of innovations that will radically alter the Polygon ecosystem and Web3 as a whole. By leveraging groundbreaking ZK innovations, such as Polygon ZK EVM, the next iteration of the best best-in-class Plonky 2 proving system, and a first-of-its-kind ZK-powered interoperability layer, Polygon 2.0 will give users and devs unlimited scalability and unified liquidity. Right now, there is a Polygon improvement proposal regarding a potential ZK-powered upgrade of Polygon Proof-of-Stake. If approved, Polygon Proof-of-Stake would become a Layer 2 ZK-EVM Validium. So make your voice heard on this proposal by joining the Polygon Discord today. You have a chance to help the Polygon community give the internet the value layer it deserves.
Curve Finance was hacked this week, and it sent shockwaves across all of DeFi and crypto. David, what happened here?
Yeah, so there was a vulnerability in the coding language, Viper, that Curve used for some of its pools. So this is actually pretty damn deep in the tech stack. And so I don't think it was anything in the way that Curve pools were built, but because they use Viper and because Viper forgot to have these like re-entrancy checks in their code base. As a result, it allowed for a re-entrancy attack, which is a pretty known attack. It's actually how the DAO hack got drained back in 2016. And so Curve had a re-entrancy attack thanks to the coding language Viper that forgot to have re-entrancy checks in it. $70 million was drained from four Curve pools, the Pindle ETH pool, the Metronome ETH pool, Alchemix ETH pool, and then the Curve / ETH liquidity pool. About $20 million was actually recovered by white hat hackers and MEV bots, interestingly enough, which is an interesting little side quest of this story. But the big story is that because of the Curve ETH pool, $5.1 million of Curve tokens, 7.2 million Curve tokens, was drained and then taken into the exploiter's wallet. Now, that's one thing. That's bad because this exploiter gets $7.2 million. The reason why this goes from a bad story about Curve to a bad story about DeFi is because the Curve founder, Michael Egorov, had taken out about $110 million of stablecoin loans against his 460 million Curve tokens, which was almost $300 million at the pre-exploit price. Then, once you put $7 million of Curve tokens into the hands of an exploiter, people start to react to that because that is, you know, we are just one button press away from dumping $5.1 million of Curve tokens into the market. So people start to withdraw liquidity. People who are providing liquidity to Curve across DeFi, either in stablecoin pairs with Curve or ETH pairs with Curve, they start to yoink their liquidity because they don't want to get dumped on. So liquidity starts to dry up around Curve. And so that makes the liquidity profile around Curve very precarious. And especially when Michael has $110 million of collateral, of borrowed stablecoins against his Curve collateral, he is under duress. His positions are under duress. And if that Curve exploiter decided to liquidate his Curve, they would cause a cascading liquidations if Michael was not able to bolster up his positions. He has since sold about $16 million of Curve to pay back some of his loans, but he still has 90-something million dollars in loans to pay back across DeFi protocols. Now, here's all of the DeFi protocols that Michael has put Curve tokens into and borrowed stablecoins from. Aave V2 is the biggest one, coming in at 300 million Curve tokens, which is 34% of the circulating supply of CRV. Abracadabra has 51 million. FraxLens had 41 million. Inverse Finance had 25 million. StakeDAO had 3 million. Silo had 2 million. This guy put Curve across DeFi and then borrowed stablecoins. Like I said, 110 million stablecoins. And so all of these are in precarious positions. If Curve goes down to the price of, I think, 34 cents, it's currently at 38 cents last I checked, but if it ever went to 34 cents, he would be liquidated and that would
cause... Wait, 38 cents? What, did it get that low?
It did flash crash that low, but not to the point of it actually being liquidated in DeFi protocols. So we're still good here for now. Curve price is currently at 58 cents, which is where it was 24 hours ago as well. So he's looking good for now, but it's still not a good place to be. Why? What did this man do with the $110 million that he borrowed from all these DeFi protocols? Well, just a few months ago, he happened to have bought a $40 million mansion, and also a second one. So he's got 2 million, like multi-million dollar mansions in Melbourne, Australia, that he bought. One of them he bought just a few months ago. I don't know about the other one.
Seems like it could be related to the stablecoin borrowing, but
seems like
we don't
that.
Know for sure. We don't know for sure. So that's, you know, a question, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's actually a ton more in this story. And we did a 45 minute, an hour long episode yesterday that got released. So we are just kind of giving the highest level of recaps. So if you want to catch up on this and go dive down into this, there's a fantastic article that the Bankless newsletter team put together. Shout out Jack. And then also we use that article to inform a podcast that we put out yesterday. And so that we have just given you the high level recap. The story goes very deep. But that's it right there.
I mean, the TLDR is we're going to be okay. This is not systemic beyond right now the CRV token.
Yes.
And
CRV
also,
token. And also if you are a DeFi protocol governor, then who has CRV as collateral, you need to pay attention. But other than that, you're fine.
Some cool things going on in the layer two world. This is, after all, layer two summer. It's been layer two summer for about 2 years now, yeah, but exactly it's right. Definitely layer two summer now. The base mainnet has just been announced, that the launch date for that. That date is, you ready for it, David? August 9th. Okay, this is next week. The next roll-up you hear, base mainnet, will be launched. There's already been some activity on base mainnet as well. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So Base has been open for developers to go build stuff. And some developers have definitely built stuff. And some people have just went on and minted tokens and meme coins and started trading them. And so this has been like the news of Base in this last week or so. This Bald token was launched on July 30th. So just like 4 days ago.
It's literally called Bald, right?
It's called Bald. It's called Bald. Why is it called Bald? Because there's a meme that Bald founders are bullish. I'm pretty sure that was DeGen Spartan that started that. And so, you know, this is Brian Armstrong's chain. It's not actually, but, you know, associated with Coinbase, therefore associated with Brian Armstrong, who is a bald man, who is a bullish bald man. And so the Bald token was made. And so that launched on July 30th. When all tokens are minted, they all start at a valuation of zero. And that went to $50 million in market cap in just under a day, with over $100 million of trading volume. Now, this is a pre-mainnet base. One of the reasons why this just, you know, rocketed to $50 million in market cap is because you can't actually leave Base. Mm. You can only go on Base. You can't go out of Base. There's no off ramp. There is now since an off ramp, but while this thing was pumping, there was no way to get off of Base. And so Bald Token just created $50 million out of thin air. And you know what happened next, Ryan?
Tell me.
It was a rug. And so as soon as it hit $50 million, the Bald deployer yoinked over 1,000 ether of liquidity, and others removed 6,800 ether of liquidity, and another person released 1,800 ether of liquidity. So over about 10,000 ether was yoinked of liquidity. And this thing goes from $50 million down to below $10 million. The valuation of Bald, not that it matters or you should care, but if you are curious, the valuation of Bald is about $11 to $12 million. As of now, after falling about 90%. And so a short little, you know, token meme coin mania in Base. But the founders removed about $32 million.
Now, we've seen meme coins before. I mean, that, you know, we've seen a lot of meme coins, of course. This is the first on Base, and it was certainly the largest last week.
Congrats, Base. You got your first meme coin.
And you were just talking about the liquidity being drained. There's more to that, because the person, the individual who removed the liquidity, seems to be the founder of Bald, the instantiator of the meme coin. And this individual, the founder, was actually the lead rug puller here and withdrew $32 million of ETH liquidity. So it was basically a founder rug meme coin that happened on the Base blockchain.
Do you get to call yourself a founder if you just founded a meme coin?
I shouldn't have said founder. I mean, what is that? Scammer? Like a scammer in chief?
Minter? Is it a scam? Because like... What is a scam anymore? So you're rugging liquidity, but you never, I'm assuming they never brought like advertised, hey, here's what I'm going to do with this Base token.
And it's then gross. I don't know what
it is
term we use for it, but like we'll call it gross. That's for sure. But there's some conspiracy theories going on about this, on who is the minter, the scammer in chief behind Bulb. So there's a lot of this conversation going on in crypto Twitter. This is one account, Hype, saying, to summarize, thousands of ETH between FTX and Bald. The Bald deployer was the first voter on all sushi proposals. Listen to these clues. The Bald deployer tweets the same sentence structure as who? SBF?
What?
Man. First time we've used those initials in a while. The Bald deployer was the biggest DYDX farmer. The Bald deployer's DYDX post sounds a lot like SBF in terms of sentence structure. The on-chain activity lines up with court dates and bail of who? SBF? We know SBF was doing stuff through VPN recently. Okay, a lot of the sleuthers are doing sleuth stuff, okay? Right. Uh-huh. And there is...
Where's the Charlie meme of all the people, of all the lines going across all the different like clues?
This is total crypto Twitter conspiracy theory, but there is the possibility, at least crypto Twitter was considering the possibility, that the rugger in chief was actually our friend SBF. And can you imagine, David, that one of the biggest frauds in history, just like hypothetically, imagine, okay, Charlie conspiracy theory, gets out on bail from his parents' basement, launches a $30 million rug on one of his biggest competitors' chains called Bald. And he thought no one would notice. Like, if that's the case, that's what happened. Now, I personally don't think that's the case after the sleuths on crypto Twitter have kind of batted this around. But I will say it does seem like the individual who deployed this has some ties to Alameda Research, right. Which
that is a fact. That is a known fact.
Is absolutely crazy here. This is another take. Somebody who's been doing some sleuthing. What does this say?
Yeah, they say, Igor says, all right, I've been sitting on this news all day, but let's look at the Bald Twitter account, which is the account that issued the base token deployer address. This is definitely someone from Alameda, but I don't think we can safely say that it is FBS. This is definitely someone from Alameda, but we cannot safely say that it is SBF, even though he's a psycho, is what this person says. And so, yeah, so if you just sleuth around and you go back to the originating address, there is a it's associated with Alameda Research. So, you know, scammers gonna scam. That's what they do.
Wow. Yeah. And they say that Sam has no access to a laptop or a limited access. So,
I don't know the details of it, but it's like he can access like the New York Times and, you know, government approved websites. I bet you he cannot be issuing contract addresses on Ethereum. I bet that is not allowed.
So they say, but the conspiracy theory lives on crypto Twitter.
Anyways, as a result of all this, Bald has made Base surpass Arbitrum again. Before Base is launched, Bald transactions surpass Arbitrum transactions in daily transaction volume. 5.3 million transactions settled in one day, which interestingly enough, Ryan, has made Base profitable. So the layer two Base sequencer has accrued $700,000 of profit in just 3 days, which is about $85 million on an annual basis. Now, this is straight alpha for coin price, in my opinion. Do you think Wall Street analysts understand how to value that thing? It's not even on mainnet and Base, Coinbase. Whoever is validating Base, sure. I think 15% of these profits goes to the Optimism Collective, actually. But on an $85 million annual basis, pre-mainnet launch, that's what Coinbase would get.
I doubt Wall Street's considering this, although Coinbase does have an earnings report that's coming out shortly. So maybe we'll see something in that. Go out, take a look at that. I don't think Wall Street's considering it, although, and so you're saying this could be a bull case, although right. You could also make this a bear case because the driver of all of this profit was a scammy meme coin. And it's possible that U.S. regulators point to Coinbase and say, so this is your crypto right. chain that you say is going to revolutionize finance in the world. And the very first big hit on it and a driver of your profit pool. Is a scammy meme coin rug pull, right? So I don't know, bearish or bullish on this initial use case here.
I choose to interpret the bullish scenario.
It's that kind of week, huh?
Although, like, yeah, it is that kind of week. But, you know, Base is a permissionless chain. And just in case anyone was confused, you do not need to go through KYC to get on Base, you can go to the Base Layer 2 through the Ethereum Layer 1 without doing any sort of KYC. Anthony Sazano had a really good take this week about this. Funniest thing about this launch of Base is that it's only meant to be for developers. The official public launch is scheduled for early August. That's August 9th. But degens are so starved for volatility that they aped anyways. Amazing. See, you know, crypto, bullish appetite, crypto. Trading appetite is on the table. People want to buy tokens right now.
For this crap, like, though, it's like casino stuff. I hate it. I hate it.
Hey, you know,
we're going to get there.
Token's going to token.
David, at some point, the like high utility, good for the world use cases will crowd out and buy the block space from the
dumb,
the crappy ones.
The dumb use cases come first. The better use cases are harder and therefore come second.
Yeah. Say that again so I believe it.
The dumb, stupid, easy use cases come first. The harder public goods, good for humanity, bullish use cases are harder to do, but they come second.
Oh, well, speaking of that, I've got another story for you. Richard Hart, do you remember that? Dumb, stupid meme coin token called Hex. What happened with that this week?
Not just Hex. Yeah, so the SEC has sued Richard Hart over Hex, Pulse Chain, and Pulse X, alleging that he raised over $1 billion across three different unregistered securities since beginning in 2019. He also defrauded investors by using investor funds for personal goods. I think there's plenty of evidence for that on crypto Twitter, and he just flashes that around. The lawsuit says that Hart continually touted these investments as a pathway to grandiose wealth for investors, claiming that Hex, for example, was built to be the highest appreciating asset that has ever existed in the history of man. Although Hart claimed these investments were for the vague purpose of supporting free speech, he did not disclose that he used millions of dollars of Pulse Chain investor funds to buy luxury goods for himself. As a result of this suit, Hex, Pulse Chain, and Pulse X have all dropped a lot. I got a chart tab if you want to open up that one. Hex went from one penny to half a penny, down 50%, which is pretty bad. Pulse Chain went from 0.001 dollars, so 1/10 of one penny, down to 1/600 of one penny. This is really annoying because the denomination on these are so low, but that's part of the strategy here. And then Pulse X goes from, I'm sorry about this, 0.00003 down to 0.00018.
We should do these in market caps.
It's also hard to see the market cap on these things just because of the way that these, but anyways, Hex is down 50%. Pulse Chain is down 40%. Pulse X is down 40%, which is pretty bad. I put these two charts together. I've layered on the Hex chart on top of the Terra Luna chart and also scaled it up to market cap. Did you know that at its very peak, Hex was double the market cap of Terra Luna?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
It was worth Hex, $80 billion?
At the peak of Hex. It was a top 10 token, bro. At the peak of Hex.
No, it wasn't.
It was. Yes.
What is wrong with this industry?
Dude, this is what we've been doing, man.
What?
It's not great. Hex was $80 billion, 2x the valuation of Luna before Luna went to zero.
Oh, man. Okay. This is another part of the story, David. Uniswap, at least on the user interface side, delisted the Hex tokens. The official Uniswap user interface basically delisted it. Now, does that mean that Uniswap, the protocol, has also delisted Hex?
No, it does not. It does not mean that.
Why, David?
Specifically the front end. So Uniswap.com does not let you, the front end website that you find in your browser, does not let you buy or sell Hex anymore. Uniswap protocol does not know about the Uniswap.com front end. Those are different pieces of technology. There's many different ways to access the Uniswap protocol. So Hex is still trading on Uniswap. No token can be, has ever be, or will ever be delisted from Uniswap, the protocol. But the Uniswap Labs company, who operates the Uniswap.com front end, has disabled the ability to buy or sell or interact with Hex in any particular way, which I think is just completely fine.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Right. So as I was thinking about Hex, right? So there's no question in my mind, this was sort of a self-promotional meme coin for this individual, Richard Hart. His real name is Richard Schuyler, by the way. So
Schuyler,
I'll call him that.
Schuyler, Schuyler.
Richard Schuyler, I think.
Sure, it's not as cool as Richard Hart.
I mean, he used this to personally get wealthy. I remember, David, you know, as part of the kind of the Ledger leak, all sorts of addresses were leaked, these sorts of things. I actually received a physical mailing from Hex and Pulse Chain promoting their token.
No way.
I don't know that this came from Richard Schuyler or who this came from, but like on Twitter, everything, it was very clearly a pump and dump mimetic scam coin promoted by an individual, right? So it's incredibly distasteful, not what this industry should represent. We could go on about it. I think the question in my mind is, what is the actual difference between Hex and XRP though? All right. So here's the problem. I worry with the SEC. I cannot defend this individual, this project, cannot defend it at all. But if you give the SEC an inch, they'll take a mile. And I expect they will make similar arguments that they made in the XRP case, in the Hex case. And who is willing to defend
Hex?
Richard. Who is willing to defend Hex? Who's willing to defend Pulse Chain? I'm certainly not, right? But is it a security? Is the asset itself a security? Is Baldcoin a security? Are all of the dog coins a security? I don't think they are. So I'm not entirely excited that the SEC is coming for a token. I'm sort of excited about the outcome that, you know, hey, we get another kind of scammer off the streets, right? That's great. That's great. But what about the precedent? What's your reaction to that? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think the point that you are making is that XRP and Hex, it can be claimed that they serve very similar purposes, which is to enrich the issuing entity. The major difference between Ripple is that they actually had some intent of doing interbank settlement transfers, as scammy as one might think Ripple is. They actually had some intent of building something. And one might say that Richard, well, he did build a chain. He raised $1 billion and maybe he spent $1 million actually building the thing that he promised to. But the intent is just so different. Also, I don't think ever Ripple directly like touted financial gain about XRP. And if you, the lawsuit says, Hart continually touted these investments as a pathway to grandiose wealth for investors, claiming that Hex was built to be the highest appreciating asset that has ever existed in the history of man. That I don't think Ripple ever did that.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that this passes the Howey test any more than XRP does.
Yeah, if we went through the litigation process, I think what you're saying is like, yeah, you would find similar, the reasons why XRP is not a security might be similar to the reason why Hex is not a security.
Yeah, and so then the intent of the founders is so subjective, or like the intent of the issuers is so subjective.
And then you're saying is like, okay, while we can't support Richard Hart and I would like to see him punished, is this the method that we want to see that happening? And I think you're calling into question that. And I'm happy just to take, this isn't the appropriate way of using Occam's razor, but just taking the simple approach of saying like, I don't give a fuck. I want the man in jail.
I just worry about the precedent this sets in general. It's like Gary Gensler stacks it up as a win. What an easy target. It's kind of the same thing they did with the SBF basically, which is like, of course, SBF was a scammer and no one could defend him. And like, then they go and they present and they see exhibit A, this is what crypto is. Here's your God. Here's your hero. His name is Sam Bankman-Fried and he perpetrated one of the largest scams in history. That's all crypto is. And they win their cases that way and they chip away at us. So that's what I'm worried about, the kind of the credible neutrality is. But like, what's weird is now it sounds like I'm defending Richard Schuyler and Hex and Pulse Chain, and I'm
hands
not
off
doing
Richard,
that.
SEC.
I am not doing that at all, to be clear. I worry about the precedent this sets. But it might not just be the SEC bringing a case against him. What's this piece of the story?
Okay, so this is now speculation. But Martin Shkreli was engaging with Eric Wall. And Eric Wall is, he's been interestingly a part of like the whole Hex ecosystem, not as a promoter, as like one of the guys trying to take it down and like help prove the fraud to the Hexicans, even though they don't want to see it. Anyways, Martin Shkreli is replying to Eric Wall. And Martin Shkreli is the guy who went to jail for jacking up, I think, like EpiPen costs. Remember him? And now he's in crypto.
Yeah.
And so he goes, if you look at page 90 of the sentencing guidelines, he is already at 40 points, which if you look up the sentencing chart in the same PDF is recommended life sentence. With all the victims, it's a rough situation if he gets cuffed. So this is, I think, some this is talking about the Department of Justice. And so Martin Shkreli is saying that he might rack up enough, whatever these points are, rack up enough points. And Martin Shkreli would be very familiar with this as somebody who he racked up, he said 39 points. And if you get to 40 points, the sentencing chart can put you in jail for life.
What are these points? Is this like fraud that you're doing? I think, something that is different
I'm not sure. I've never racked up any points. I've never been charged by the Department of Justice.
Misappropriation?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. It's a different set of causes. And these things seem more relevant to the individual in question, at least in my opinion, rather than the SEC making a determination as to whether some particular meme coin is a security or not. I just don't want them to do that. But I do want our justice system to catch scammers.
Right.
That would be nice.
So I asked Martin Shkreli, what do you think the odds are that the Department of Justice picks this up? And he goes, 99% if they have the goods on misappropriation, which I seem that they likely do. And he goes, it's likely that he settles to 10 to 15 years in jail. If he goes to trial, 25 to 30 years is easily on the table. So I don't know. I'm trusting Martin Shkreli is not something that I would do, but he's got experience in this matter, having gone through this. And so he's saying that it's likely that eventually we will find Department of Justice charges upon Richard Hart.
Meanwhile, David, in another court, do you remember Kyle Davies, the 3 Arrows Capital co-founder?
How could I forget?
Well, he said he apparently renounced his U.S. citizenship.
Oh.
And so as a result of doing that, I'm no longer an American citizen. The U.S. courts have no jurisdiction over him. Is that how that works, David? Can you do that?
Can I just say I'm not a citizen?
If you break a law and you just, you know, I was never a citizen.
I actually listened to there's an old Planet Money episode about this. I used to love Planet Money. It hasn't been so great lately, but they did an episode on people who just like declared independence from citizenship so they wouldn't have to pay taxes.
Really?
Yeah, there's been like a handful of court cases about this who people just say, I'm not a citizen anymore. And they're also living inside of the United States when they do this. And there's been a whole series of like legal efforts about this. You can't do it. they won't let
you. It doesn't work that way?
It doesn't work like that. No, not at all. He's just trying to abscond from participating in bankruptcy and all these things that he has to do. He is currently in Dubai, I believe, which is a non-extradition country. Basically Kyle Davies is saying that the United States courts can no longer tell him what to do because he declares to no longer be a citizen of the United States, which again, the United States says you can't do that.
Well, certainly racking them up this year, David. You have a tweet here. Do Kwon, jailed in Montenegro, awaiting extradition. Alex Mashensky, charged by the Department of Justice. Check. SBF, house arrest, awaiting trial. Check. 3 Arrows Capital, permanently exiled from the U.S., and all extradition countries will see, check. Richard Hart sued by the SEC, speculation of DOJ indictment. What? Why are you putting this checklist together, David?
This goes back to our Permission to be Bullish weekly roll-up. Was that last week's Permission to be Bullish? Like, we're cleaning up the industry. Like, Richard Hart sued by the SEC. I will say fingers crossed that the Department of Justice is not far behind. 3 Arrows Capital, like, they're not in jail, but they are quarantined as far away from the United States as possible and all United States allied countries, you know, the West. They could go to jail. I will give like a two-thirds, a majority checkbox, but there's still left to be things to be done there. Same thing with SBF. He's under house arrest. He's awaiting trial. I'm assuming he's going to go to jail if I want to place faith in society. Alex Mashensky, charged by the Department of Justice. Do Kwon is in Montenegro awaiting extradition to the United States. Who else is there? We got him. We got them all.
You know, another question here is, does this act as a deterrent for the next cycle? When a new scammer thinks there's easy prey out there in crypto, and I'm going to launch my token, I'm going to do my fraud, I'm going to do it this way. When they look back and they see, well, the previous cycle, look what happened to the scammers in chief last time. Justice was served. Does it act as a deterrent? Because if so, that is also bullish moving forward. It means, hopefully, we have less scammers entering the space because it works like the real world, right? If you commit fraud and it's egregious, then justice will be served. Mm-hmm. And I think that is bullish as well.
Yeah. Richard Hart got away for all of his shenanigans for way too long. Do you know there's a documentary being made by him?
About Richard Hart?
About Richard Hart, about Hex, yeah. August 4th and 5th? Wow, that's in 2 days. Oh my God, the timing of this is great.
the documentary industry has to love this. Like, Hollywood's got to love what happened in crypto in, you know, the last few years. Yeah. So much material.
There
so much
are
content.
So many stories that are some of the craziest sitcom-y stories, ones that crypto Twitter does know about, ones that they don't, that I wish all of them could come to light, but there's too many of them.
We'll get a few, though. I think we'll get a few. David, speaking of great content, what's coming up next?
Coming up next, ETH is getting an ETF, at least a futures ETF, perhaps. Binance could face fraud charges from the Department of Justice. But what is the Department of Justice waiting for? We'll talk about that. Two protocol birthdays this week. These birthdays keep on changing. Something turns 8. Something else turns 2. The WorldCoin debate continues. Some angles that we might have missed that we're going to cover. And also, $750 million magically appears in Bitcoin buy pressure. Where'd it come from? I don't know. But we're going to get to all of these stories and more. But first, a moment to talk about our fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially MetaMask Portfolio, the portfolio you need to help navigate the incoming bull market, because we're feeling bullish. We're going to go hear from them right now. Are you a MetaMask user? Well, you're listening to Bankless, so of course you are. The wallet you know and love just got a whole lot better. MetaMask Portfolio is the ultimate one-stop shop for all of your crypto needs. It gives you a holistic view of your crypto portfolio across multiple chains and multiple addresses all at once. You can easily view and manage all your coins, tokens, and NFTs in one convenient place just by connecting your wallet. MetaMask Portfolio goes beyond just viewing your portfolio, though. Inside the portfolio, you can do all the incredible money verbs that make DeFi so powerful. You can buy, swap, bridge, and stake your crypto assets with ease. It's like having a powerful battle station for all your DeFi moves right at your fingertips. So if you're looking to do more in Web3 your way, MetaMask Portfolio is the answer. I already know that you have a MetaMask wallet, so go check out your MetaMask Portfolio. Learn more at metamask.io/portfolio. Arbitrum is accelerating the Web3 landscape with a suite of secure Ethereum scaling solutions. Hundreds of projects have already deployed onto Arbitrum One, with a flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystem. Arbitrum Nova is quickly becoming a Web3 gaming hub, and social dApps like Reddit are also calling Arbitrum home. And now, Arbitrum Orbit allows you to use Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Layer 3, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. Faster transaction speeds and significantly lower gas fees. Arbitrum empowers you to explore and build without compromise. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first app on Arbitrum. Binance could face fraud charges from the Department of Justice. The US DOJ officials are considering fraud charges against Binance, but they're concerned about the cost to consumers. According to people familiar with the matter, reported by Semaphore.com, federal prosecutors worry that if they indict Binance, it could cause a run on the exchange similar to the one that befell the now bankrupt platform FTX, causing customers to lose money and potentially spurring a panic in the crypto market. Binance and its co-founder CZ are already facing charges, of course, from the SEC, in addition to the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. So the Department of Justice wants to charge Binance with fraud, but they're not going to, out of fear that it will cause an FTX-style run on the bank, which is interesting.
Do you want to interpret that as bullish this week, David?
Okay, so either CZ and Binance are completely solvent. There's probably fraud, but they could be completely solvent, and they're not getting charged by the DOJ because the DOJ doesn't understand how to tell the difference between FTX and Binance. Or Binance does have a hole in its balance sheet and the Department of Justice does know something, and so this is a real concern. I'm going to cautiously go with the former, because I kind of am grouping Binance and Tether FUD as the same things. Like, I've heard 10,000 Tether FUDs. I've heard about 5,000 Binance FUDs. But that is the news.
Yeah, who knows? Has always been our take. Like, it's really hard to speculate.
You just don't know.
I guess my speculation, though, is there's no way this is as bad as SBF if there's something here.
No way. There's no way.
But there might be something here. We don't know yet. But CZ's response, as usual, is what? Four. What does that mean? He tweeted this out. The morning of.
Four is his shorthand for ignore FUD, fake news, and attacks.
So nothing going on here. Just four. What would you expect me to say, right?
Yeah. No matter what, four. Yeah.
David, did you know this, though? China is actually Binance's largest market by far. 20% of their trading happens in China. And I thought crypto was illegal in China, but apparently it's the largest market for Binance.
You know what I don't know is how does China feel about Binance? How does the Chinese government, what is their stance towards Binance? Do they care about it? Do they not care about it? Do they think it's good, think it's bad? I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know the answer either. Although, didn't Binance originate
in China? Yeah.
And then had to move.
Yes.
There's crypto bans. It's not friendly jurisdiction. Yep. So it can't be super friendly. I mean, they're not on great terms.
Right.
But this is crazy. Do you know, even if Binance totally pulled out of the US and Europe as a result of this, they'd still be the largest crypto platform in the world in terms of trading volume.
It's pretty
That's how big Asia is.
It's pretty hard to state how big Binance is. Binance is like,
wow,
like 70 to 80% of all crypto trading volume, and Coinbase is not 15. Maybe it is 15-ish.
Yeah. We'll watch that. We'll have to see how that evolves. David, it's birthday time. We've been teasing the entire episode. Whose birthday was it this week?
It's Ethereum's birthday. Ethereum turned eight on July 30th is when the first proof of work block got minted by Ethereum in 2015. It's been a crazy, crazy journey. Here's Lefteris on the day of the, and I'm pretty sure that's Vitalik, on the day of the first block of Ethereum. Yeah. Wow. 8 years. You know what's crazy? I remember coming into crypto, and this is something I tell all newcomers into crypto. I came into crypto in 2017, two years after Ethereum got started, and I felt so late, so incredibly late. And now we're 8 years into Ethereum, and people coming in probably in 2021 probably feel the same. Crypto has a way of making you feel late.
8 years, man.
Eight years.
Look, that's what, like second grade? I mean, that's still pretty young. Like just that's an 8 year
very
old.
Year. Yeah, it's very young. Yeah.
$400 billion in secured value. You add up all of the tokens. $3.6 billion in annualized profits. Thanks, Ultrasound Money, for that. And a total of 17.8 million blocks of uncensorable digital property. That's not too bad for an 8 year old.
Not bad. Yeah, it's not any better than me at 8 years old, that's for sure.
Happy birthday, Ethereum. And maybe to celebrate, something's going on in the Ether futures ETF race. What's this?
Yeah, so here's what Ether gets for turning eight. It gets an ETF futures. And so a handful of companies, Bitwise, VanEck, ProShares, Grayscale, Volatility Shares, have all submitted an ETF futures for Ether. Six of them. All at once, interestingly enough.
That's actually, when you think about it, you know, 8 years time to get here, that's not too bad.
Not too bad.
Like all the way from like just a project and a white paper in somebody's head, all the way to like the CME regulated futures for a new type of digital commodity. Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
How much is Ether market cap right now? 150 billion,
something
like that?
No, I think it's like 200 something.
I mean, it's like top 50 assets worldwide.
Yeah, $220 billion market cap.
Well, there you go.
Doing great. Doing great.
That ETF might happen before the Bitcoin ETF, which might be interesting. Now, this is not a spot ETF. This is a futures ETF. And Bitcoin already has one of those, but this would be the first time. Yeah. So that's kind of cool news. And David, as usual, the Canadians are ahead. While Americans are fumbling around with the futures ETF for ETH, powerful Canadians will start staking ETH in their spot ETH ETF later this month. This is DJed Spartan. Canadians already have a spot ETH ETF. So what is America waiting for?
Wow.
I think that's the question.
I love how it's staked. That's so good. Yeah. So the ETF isn't Ether. It's staked Ether because of course it would be.
That way makes better. Sense.
That makes
sense. Buy your internet bond.
Oh my
bond.
God.
That's
there's
the
going to be so much ETH staked. They're going to nuke our yields, bro.
We're totally going to nuke
our
yields.
Goddamn Canadians.
David, you know, that wasn't the only birthday though. We also have to celebrate another like baby birthday, a 2 year old.
Coming up this week is not yet. So we are on the cusp of EIP 1559 turning two. This was August, first week of August 2021 is when Ether started being burned for the very first time. As of 2 years, $10 billion of Ether has been burned, which is just nuts. $9,600 of Ether burned every single minute for 2 years in a row.
You know, David, somebody brought this to our attention. So that is EIP 1559. So that's a different type of burn on kind of transaction fees. Mm-hmm. What would happen if we started burning MEV?
Oh, you mean as in what is going to happen in the future when we put MEV burn into the protocol?
I mean, that's a likely future trajectory. What are we looking at here?
We're looking at a chart of Ether burn with and without MEV burn.
with MEV burn, we would be what? Very deflationary, this looks like.
So without MEV burn, we have been net deflationary by negative 0.285%.
Okay.
With MEV burn, we would have been negative 0.5%. So we would be twice as deflationary with MEV burn than we currently are. Well, almost twice. Almost twice.
The furnace just keeps getting bigger.
Love it. And it's and Ryan, it's still a bear market. The bull market's ahead of us. Imagine the burn then.
This is a release from MetaMask. Attention stakers, you can now stake your Matic with MetaMask Portfolio. Check it out. We talk a lot about MetaMask Portfolio. MetaMask is actually a bankless sponsor, but this is really cool to see their user interface in the portfolio app, and you can actually stake your Matic tokens. You can stake Ether as well, but adding another verb to the MetaMask Portfolio, stake, to stake.
Yeah, so, okay, so this, I think, is, A, this is cool because MetaMask Portfolio, we're going to talk about with what I'm bullish on, and it has to do with setting up my battle station, my bull market battle station, which you should do, teaser. But MetaMask is now making it easy to stake for a layer 2 network. Do you think it stops at Polygon? No, it doesn't just stop at Polygon. All layer 2 networks, once they decentralize, once they become permissionlessly validated, you're going to be able to see that stake button. Am I allowed to do this? Yes. Tomorrow, I don't think the announcement is out, but today, Offchain Labs is announcing shared sequencing, permissionless validation of Arbitrum. So you're going to be able to stake your ARB token and validate the Arbitrum chain. So
what?
Arbitrum, stake. Optimism, stake. ZK Sync, stake. Any layer 2 that gets to the point of decentralizing the sequencer and allows for permissionless validation, there's going to be a stake button. I mean, probably. So...
There definitely should be. And why stake? For yield, right?
For the yield, bruh. Yeah.
Jeez.
Stake your Ether for the layer 1. Stake your layer 2 tokens for the layer 2. Everyone pick your layer 2 that you think is going to get the most yield and press the stake button that's probably coming to MetaMask Portfolio eventually.
So much cool stuff going on. This is another cool thing going on. This was an EIP that almost escaped my attention. EIP 6968.
Ooh,
this is
almost,
Kevin Iwaki writing this. 6869. Oh, sorry.
It's waiting for you to get that one.
Cut me not getting that joke.
No, don't do that. Keep it in. Keep it in.
Enables ecosystem chains. What is an ecosystem chain? It's a chain with contract secured revenue, CSR. That means the contract deployers can earn sequencer fees when their contracts consume gas. Okay, break this down for the layman. What is this EIP proposing?
Yeah, so this is, remember Canto? Remember the Canto chain that had a brief moment but no longer.
Don't slam, David.
So Canto was all,
help yourself.
Canto was all about a chain because of CSR, contract secured revenue. So if you built a chain, a contract on Canto, you would get fees at any time as a developer. You would get fees anytime that somebody used your contract. It's like a sustainability mechanism. So this has, like all things, anything that's been put into a chain is now an EIP for Ethereum. This is the way that it goes. This is, oh, never mind. EIP 6968 is contract secured revenue for layer 2. So this is meant to be for layer 2 specifically. And so any layer 2 can accept this EIP to create a contract secured revenue primitive on top of their layer 2. And so it's an incentive to get devs, like, it pays devs. Like if you are a dev and you make a contract on a layer 2 and people use your contract, you get money. So it's a financing mechanism.
It's so huge. I think this is massive. I think it's incredibly bullish. So what this means is basically like if you create a kind of like a public good, you don't have a monetization mechanism. Like let's say you create a very cool stable coin on a layer 2 that starts to accrue a lot of value, a lot of transactions around it. You actually get paid. Sequencer fees in order to do that. It's a whole new business model, I think, on top of layer 2s, and that's what's exciting here.
Yeah, there's been a lot of debate about contract secured revenues and the economic models behind it and whether they're good or sustainable or not. We haven't seen them actually meaningfully get adoption, and perhaps there's good reasons for that. Maybe we haven't seen enough experimentation, but now we are seeing this experimentation move to the layer 2s. Speaking of moving to layer 2s, the temperature check for Celo, this is the temp check of the Celo layer 1, the governance checks like, hey, do we want to move to a layer 2 past 100% to zero. Okay, not completely zero. 56 million to 632. Call that 100 to zero. So Celo is officially going to be a layer two. Yeah. Uh-huh.
We spent a lot of time last week talking about WorldCoin. I think there's just a couple of things to tie off. The first is this tweet thread from Eric Wall. It's actually almost like a Twitter post these days. It's pretty long, so we probably can't read all of it, David. But what's the TLDR here?
Eric Wall does a fantastic job just unpacking technical subjects for laymen. And so it's simply too long. It's almost 1,000 words, I'd say. So I can't read it. It would take 5 to 10 minutes. But there's a link in the show notes to go read this tweet thread. I think if you want to understand the strengths and weaknesses of WorldCoin and specifically where those weaknesses are and why this thing might not work, this tweet thread is for you. He just unpacks all the nuances very, very well. And so if you just want, if I feel actually like complete on the WorldCoin conversation because of this tweet thread, this is just such a weird, awkward photo of Sam Altman.
A Midjourney photo, David. No way this is real. There's just no way this is
gotta
real.
It's gotta be. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. A human would not know not to pose like that. okay. So that's the call to action. If you want to read this tweet thread, I highly recommend it. Also this week I saw a tweet here that Ryan's got pulled up from Martin Koppelman, who's also a creator of a different decentralized identity protocol. And so he was retweeting this tweet that did some address analysis from WorldCoin addresses. So they've detected, in this tweet, in this image, three different clusters of WorldCoin addresses that all appear to converge down to one address. And so it looks like 130 individual addresses actually are just three people.
Sock puppets, basically.
Exactly. So it has been Sybil attacked. And so if you read the Eric Wall X thread, he basically, the TLDR is like, yeah, every single WorldCoin account is 100% verifiable, a unique pair of eyeballs. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it is in the hands of a unique person. And this is what we are seeing here today. So this, the whole premise of WorldCoin and even anyone giving legitimacy to WorldCoin, which included me, is based on the fact that they can actually produce Sybil resistance. And if they can't do it, then this thing is worth zero. It's not.
Yeah, that's the base requirement for decentralized identity is you have to be Sybil resistant. If you're not, right, then the solution just doesn't work. So
yeah. You can prove unique eyeballs does not mean you can prove unique humans. And so that this is the weakness that seems to be appearing with the WorldCoin. With the WorldCoin thing. Binance received a deposit address of a bunch of WorldCoin tokens from 150 different wallets within 48 hours after launch, profiting about $10,000. So this is, that UBI WorldCoin distribution, somebody is farming that. Many people are farming that and they're profiting from it, which breaks the whole system.
You got to fix that if you're going to do this well. Yep. MicroStrategy, David, they're continuing to buy Bitcoin. MicroStrategy is about to pump another $750 million into Bitcoin?
Dude, thin air, man. They're minting MicroStrategy shares out of thin air just to buy Bitcoin, and it's working.
I totally knew this would work. Saylor is channeling demand for Bitcoin ETF into demand for MicroStrategy shares. He's printing infinite MicroStrategy shares and buying finite Bitcoin. Central banks and governments should take note. Maybe they're the next ones to do this is kind of the point. I was looking at like an old E-Trade account I have, and there's a crypto section in E-Trade, and you know what they recommend? Because you can't actually buy, a spot ETF. Uh-huh. Of course, the Grayscale products, that kind of thing. Also, MicroStrategy. Crypto exposure in your E-Trade account, then buy MicroStrategy stock. And they're not wrong, but they're so messed up.
I'm just going to chalk that up to TradFi failings. Last bit of news here from DCG says it's close to reaching an agreement on its Genesis Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So in a letter to investors, DCG says, after a month of tireless negotiations led by DCG leadership, we are close to reaching an agreement in principle to resolve the claims in the Grayscale Chapter 11 cases. So we expect to bring these cases to a close soon. So maybe the the DCG story is coming to a close here. Which is just around the time for the bull market to start. So that makes sense.
Yeah. And getting that story closed would be bullish. David, we got some bullish questions coming at us. Number one, will OP tokens accrue value? How does Base fit in? That's a question from a Bankless listener. Also, are L2s as safe as Ethereum? We'll get into that. And there's also a pretty hot Vitalik take this week on the state of crypto right now. And it's bullish, of course. The theme of this episode.
Would Vitalik say that it's bullish?
I don't know. I'm putting words in his mouth. But guys, we'll be right back. We will be right back with all of that just after we thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Hiring people worldwide, paying them in crypto, providing them access to benefits, it all's so complex. But it doesn't have to be. Complying with labor laws, payroll rules, tax obligations, and crypto regulations in every country that you employ someone is difficult, time-consuming, manual, and costly. And it's drawing more and more attention from regulators and governments. But there is good news. Toku is here. Toku is the first employment and compensation platform for the crypto industry that makes this easy. Toku helps you hire employees or contractors and pay them in fiat or crypto legally, compliantly, and with all the taxes handled in over 100 different jurisdictions. So whether you're an early stage company with just a team of two, or you're an enterprise with 200, Toku has a solution that meets your needs. Toku is already working with the leading companies in the space, Protocol Labs, Hedera, Gitcoin, and many more. So transform your employment and token payroll operations with Toku. You can reach out to Toku at toku.com/bankless or click the link in the show notes.
Question from Kefu. I think I've heard of value accrual to OP from the main OP chain via fees and MEV, but will there be any value accrual from other OP chains like Base to the OP token itself? How is a layer two token like OP going to accrue value, David?
Yeah, so this is a really, really good question. I think from the early days of Base mainnet launch, they said that they committed that they, A, want to be a part of the OP collective because they used the OP stack chain to create Base. Mm-hmm. And being a part of the OP collective means that you need to contribute some of your sequencer fees of your layer two towards the OP collective to help finance the retroactive public goods funding effort, basically put the money in the OP collective.
It's like a tax on revenue kind of thing.
I think the number is 15%, 10 to 15%, I think is right. We are, like I said earlier in the episode, we are doing a episode with Ben Jones and Jesse from Base about the law of chains, which is how this standard is going to be set. And if you are an OP stack chain and you want to be a part of the super chain, you must abide by the law of chains, which assures some level of block space quality and assurances, while also, and also like what does it mean to be a part of the OP collective? And that's probably where a certain number, I think the number is 15%, but it's probably up to governance anyways.
That's kind of cool. It's like a confederation of chains.
It's a union. Yeah, it's a union of chains. Yeah,
you can choose to be a part of it or not, but if you do choose to be a part of it, you have to pay your taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So 15% of that base revenue that we were talking about earlier goes to the Optimism Collective. The Zora chain, 15%. WorldCoin, if that is a thing that lasts, 15%. I think, again, we do your own research if the 15% is the correct number. I will ask Ben and Jesse what that number is when we do the episode with them. But I think that episode, that number is public somewhere that was announced way back when with the base train. Anyways, we will get those details. So that's how this works. This is the model for the OP stack chains. If you want to be a part of the super chain, if you want the composability, if you want the network effects of Optimism, you got to pay the tax to the Optimism Collective.
Here's a question from KiwiDog4. Once we have ZK rollups with permissionless sequencers and trustless bridges, will L2s have basically the same security guarantees as L1? This has also been a Twitter debate recently that I've heard. So the question of, will layer 2s have the same security guarantees as their layer 1? What's your take on that?
I think the operative word is, will layer twos have basically the same security guarantees as layer one? And yes, basically they will. There will always be some nuances. There will always be some smart contract risks because layer twos are smart contracts. But with permissionless sequencers, trustless bridges, all of the things that decentralize layer two chains, also with some time, some Lindy, layer twos will give you basically the same security guarantees as layer ones. And that is why we are doing the layer two roadmap. That's why Ethereum is a roll-up centric roadmap, because we have found ways to make scalable chains have the same security guarantees as the layer ones. It's always been part of the vision. And so I don't even necessarily think ZK roll-ups are the only, will have a monopoly on this. It's just they have a little bit faster path there. Optimistic rollups will have the, also have the same security guarantees, but that is the layer two vision. The layer one and the layer twos, those lines blur once we get to permissionless sequencers, trustless bridges, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
So a couple thoughts on that or follow-ups. So, addending what you just said, it's important to realize none of the chains are there today. Mm-hmm. All right. So you can see this on layer two beat. It's what I have in front of us. A lot of them are at stage zero, doesn't mm-hmm. offer that full decentralization, or stage one, which is kind of training wheels. They need to get to stage two. And that's where everything is permissionless. All the sequencers are completely whitelisted. Upgrades are handled correctly. Well, those are the caveats. And we're certainly not there yet with layer twos. The other thing I'll say is there is this dependency on the trustless bridge from Ethereum to a layer two on that working. So there's some smart contract code there, of course, and smart contract code can have bugs. So there's that dependency as well. But for all intents and purposes, it's almost the same security guarantees as the layer two once we get to this stage two level for across these rollups.
Remember when layer two only had layer two B only had like four or five layer twos on them?
Oh, those are the days.
Scroll down. How far is it? Oh my God, it keeps on going. 29 layer twos.
We just got started, David.
Once Ether hits all-time highs, how many layer twos are going to be on layer 2B? Question for you. Make a prediction.
Once Ether all-time highs, you mean the summon amount? What's all-time highs? You're talking about this cycle?
$4,900 for Ether. Once Ether breaks all-time highs,
and Matterhorn elevation?
Hitting the Matterhorn. Yeah. Okay. How many layer twos will be on layer 2B?
Ooh. I'm going to guess 900.
900?
That's my Matterhorn number.
Oh, that's my Matterhorn number. Okay.
Maybe all-time high, I'll say 300.
Okay.
Back.
I was going to go with 100, but that seems a little low. I'm going to go, can I give a range?
I'm more bullish than you.
100 to 150 layer twos on layer 2B when Ether breaks all-time high.
All right. Yeah. It's on. The bet's on, David. Yeah. Some takes this week. This one from Vance Spencer. What's he saying?
Vance Spencer says, it's important to internalize blue chip DeFi or anything was a meme last cycle. Nobody was generating sustainable cash flows. And to be honest, the industry was a shit show. Yeah, kind of was. Launching a successful protocol and 15 VCs funded forks would come in with tokens and vampire attack you. This cycle is different. Real sustainable cash flows with paths to scale. Large markets, all competitors now dead or thoroughly discouraged. No VC money to fund second, third, fourth, fifth place. Consolidation, blue chippery. I think what Vance is saying is we're off of the shitcoin roller coaster and we are focusing on quality and fees. That was one of my big takeaways from ECC, is like the maturation and verticalization of so many DeFi protocols. And this is the take that Kane Warwick gave me ECC 2022 a year ago. We are in now a bull market for fees. I mean, it turns out we were going through a bear market, actually. But, you know, Ethereum people, we're always just like a couple of years ahead of the curve. And our takes are just like a couple of years too early. But you know, we're witnessing
you're
a layer two
about
summer.
Protocols that capture cash
fees,
flows, basically.
Fees.
Revenue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now they don't flow to the governance token yet though, right? Like Uniswap doesn't have its fee switch.
Well, it has the fee switch, it's just not on.
It's not on. Yeah. Turn it on. Let's stop it.
He continues and Vance says, we figured out where aggregation points are and who the long term incumbents in DeFi will be. We figured out some protocols are features and likely to be rolled into larger incumbents. Exactly what I was saying. If you squint a little bit, you can see the fang of DeFi is assembling. the Fang of DeFi, which Vance is saying is Smell, S-M-E-L-L. I don't actually know if he's actually articulated which ones they are. S is probably synthetics.
We know what they start with, though.
Yeah. S is synthetics. M is maker. I don't know what E is.
Well, for people L who
is Lido, and the other one, the second L is, I don't know.
Well, for people who aren't familiar with Fang, though, that these are the tech companies, right? Like we got
Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google.
Yeah.
Does Netflix still belong to be there? I don't know if Netflix belongs to be there anymore.
Is the other A Alphabet or is that Apple? That's a good question. Anyway, it's up for debate.
Who else would the G be? It's Apple. It's Apple and Amazon.
Yeah.
Apple, Amazon, Google. Netflix, Google.
Yeah. We figured it out live. Look at that. Look at us, David. This is a tweet from my co-host here, a take for the week, maybe. Can you feel it? The bull market has started. I feel it, David. I'm hitting like. I'm hitting retweet.
The comments. Not everyone feels it in the comments.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not everyone feels it. I feel it.
Anthony Sassano feels it. He says the bull market never left.
Anthony's like it doesn't count when you say you're bullish every single day.
Can you feel it? The crab market keeps crabbing. That's a reply. Maybe it's just a crab market, David.
We have doubled the market cap over the last 7 months.
All right.
I'm claiming the bull market has started, is what I'm saying.
Going to Matterhorn.
I think you can feel it. Yeah.
What are you bullish on this week, David?
What I was bullish on last week was that, hey, I'm just bullish, which is also what I'm bullish on this week. I'm just bullish. But I will tell you, I'm doing something about it now. I'm setting up my battle station, my bull market battle station. And so what does that mean?
What does that mean? That sounds awesome.
Yeah. I bought a cheap little computer to do all my signing, which is not my work computer. So I'm taking my signing and having a cheap little computer that is my crypto signing computer. I recommend this for anyone who downloads files or works on their computers like me. And so I'm getting a dedicated signing computer. And also just setting up all of the websites and infrastructure that I once was a skill, which got rusty in the bear market because, you know, appetites for tokens are gone in the bear market. So this is like, you know, dexscreener.com for people that want to stay ahead of the game on dexes. And just making sure that you have your situation prepped to make moves and make moves quickly during the bull market. Because if you want to make money in the bull market, you need to be pressing buttons. You need to be pressing send transaction. You need to be approving transactions. You need to be doing things. And so I think it would behoove everyone to get their wallets in order. Make sure that I've had problems with my web browser attachments, my extensions, getting those fixed, making sure that you are moments away from making a move if you need to make a move, and just setting up your setup so you can know the state of your things, perhaps MetaMask portfolios for you, sponsor. But just like setting up your battle station, making sure that you're ready to go, collecting data and being able to preview the DeFi landscape, because I'm saying we are in the first out of a 9-inning game. And here we are.
That's cool, David. The crypto battle station is a great idea. Bull market battle station is a great idea.
Yeah.
I will also say, and just to take that, you know, the traditional Ryan boring type approach here is you also don't have to do that. Do that.
This is a game that you choose to enter. You do not have to play.
The game that you can just choose to play if you're kind of like just tired right now is dollar cost average in. Yeah. I'll just counter this with the point of like the game that David's playing. I know because I know David, he's not playing with his entire stack. Mm. So he's got a portion kind of set aside, right? He's playing this game, right, David? He's nodding his head.
The staking stack. That is a different game. One could play the staking game, which is a different game to play.
Yes. And I just want to, so that you don't hear from what David just said, all right, I got my bull market battle station. I'm going all in with all of my assets on whatever kind of pumping, whatever I'm feeling good about in this bull cycle. I'm going to make it all back this bull cycle. I will just say, I think that boredom has stolen more money from crypto investors than Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah.
All right. The worst mistakes I've made in crypto have been because I was bored and I wanted to click buttons when I shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to click those buttons. Sometimes you have to be cautious and can just dollar cost average in. So the way to manage this in your mind is just partition things.
Yes.
Have your staking game that you're playing, your accumulation game, your kind of like your ETH game, and then have another game on the side that you play and separate those interests, separate those accounts and separate them in your mind too.
I think it is worth noting that there are different games to play. The game that I'm talking about when I'm setting up my bull market battle station is the game that, like, there was two big victories that I had in terms of financial gain during the last bull market. One was YFI at like $2,000 and Loot at two one. Ether. Yeah.
Oh, you and sold Loot. That was a good idea.
I did sell Loot. Not at the perfect top, but I definitely made money. I definitely made money on Loot. And YFI wasn't so fast, but it was still pretty fast. And you needed to be ready and understand things and make your move. Loot was extremely fast. And that's the game that I'm talking about. It's the phenomenon comes and you press buy early and you just ride it. And it's a kind of a gamble. Loot was absolutely a gamble. Like, it was a fucking text on a JPEG. But that's the game that I'm referencing.
And it did not work out long term.
It worked out for the short term for people who sold. There's other games to play. There is the self-staking at home optimization game where, you know, Ethereum yield is not homogenous. If you play the game well, can increase your yields just by staking. And so you're not like perusing Twitter. You're not like making gambles. You are just refining your system. I can't play that game nearly as well because I leave and go away from home. And so I can't play that game nearly as well. But that is a very valid game to play as well. So figure out what game you want to play and then set up your battle station for that.
Another way to say that, and this is kind of classic Bankless, is as you enter crypto, choose your character class.
Yes.
You know, you start like your Diablo account, it's some RPG you're going to play. What are you going to be? A necromancer, barbarian? Like, Amazon. What are you going to be, right?
Amazon.
All right. Yeah. Well, so David is doing this hybrid character class of like settler / trader, but he has like a separation of those things. And you have to choose your character class. You can't like jump from character class to character class or you'll get beat up in this market.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, so I've got my battle station set up, Ryan. What are you bullish on? What's your battle station look like?
You know what? Well, it's not exactly a battle station, David, but I will tell you what I'm bullish on this week. I am bullish on founders that stayed. The founders, the protocol, the DeFi founders in particular, that did not orphan their projects early. I feel like that happened with a lot of DeFi projects, right? As they got orphaned, the founders left, the parents left before they could grow into functional adults. But there are a number of founders who stayed. And I'm very bullish on those founders. And as a result, I'm bullish on those projects too. Mm-hmm. Synthetics, Kane is one. He kind of left, but now he's back a little bit.
He left with good reason to decentralize the protocol. And then he came back also with good reason.
Yes. Aave is another. Stani. Uniswap, Hayden Adams is still there. There's a whole list that this Twitter thread pumped out. DeFi Dad talks about the founder of Curve, the founder of Frax, the founder of Instadap, the founders of Balancer, Liquidity, Nexus, all of these founders stayed. And I just want to give a big shout out to the founders who stayed. Mm-hmm. They are settlers, not tourists. And I think we have the potential to build the fangs of DeFi, as Vance was saying. And it's going to be done not over one cycle, but over multiple cycles.
Right.
And so big shout out to all of the founders who've just dug deep and had the grit to actually stay through these cycles. I think the results will show for themselves.
Yeah, 100%. And also, I will also say that MakerDAO, not just Rune Christensen, but there's a number of very early MakerDAO OGs who are still working on MakerDAO and then also have gone off to found other projects. And so not to say that like, hey, you must stick with your first project and your first baby until the end of time, but just staying in crypto, like Bankless was not my first job. Sticking around just generally is always the way to wealth and success.
I totally agree. You know what, David? We missed the Vitalik take.
We did miss
the Vitalik
take.
We promised that. We teased it. Yes. Okay.
This isn't a tweet. This is just what we were talking to Vitalik about privately, where he says, I feel like crypto culture might actually be the best that it's ever been in 2023. People's biggest complaints, amazingly, seems to be that, quote, there's too much focus on infrastructure.
Yeah, which, I've said that.
From the point of view of almost any other socio-political system in the world today, sounds like not a complaint, but a success story. It's honestly really heartening to hear Vitalik say that crypto culture is in the best place that it's been, because crypto culture has not always been so great.
We spent some of this episode talking about the Bald token and Richard Schuyler. So, you know, yeah, it feels good when Vitalik says it. What do you think about this point that it's actually I'll use the words bullish. Vitalik wouldn't use these words. Yeah. The focus on infrastructure is actually bullish though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think he's saying this, he's comparing this from socioculturally. He's saying like, yeah, this is compared to like governments and like cities and, you know, city organization planners. like crypto, we're complaining that like everyone's building infrastructure where the rest of the world generally has failing infrastructure, at least the United States does.
Yeah. And like, so can we get more infrastructure?
Right. And so I think if even if we're like over indexing on infrastructure, good, because crypto is supposed to last for generations upon generations. Like that's a good thing that we're over indexing on infrastructure. So bullish.
You ready for meme of the week, David?
I am ready for meme of the week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here it is. I think this is you when you came back down from the mountain.
This is exactly
what are we looking at? Bro?
Okay. So this is Pseudo Theos from the Scroll team. So this is the meme of the guy coming back into the room with pizza boxes. And the quote is me taking a day off of crypto. This is how I felt because I left to climb the Matterhorn Sunday morning. And then I came back and all of this was happening. Viper zero day bug, Curve exploit, Aave stables depegging, Base one way bridges into ball tokens. This all happened into like not even in 24 hours. Dude. This is 12 hours. All of that happened. That was insane.
He comes back in the apartment with pizza boxes and it's just absolute chaos. There's fires and fighting.
Mayhem. Yes. Yeah.
That's what it feels like to be in crypto for sure. That's why you can't take a day off.
We hope
you don't take a week off the weekly roll up because our job is to absorb all of this chaos and then relay the signal to you.
Yeah. Our mental health is great.
Risk and disclaimers. Got to end with this, of course. None of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.